shortly. You received a copy of the minutes of the September 12th meeting. The chair will entertain a motion to approve those minutes. Moved by Tom. Is there a second? Second by Joe. Any corrections or additions to the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Thank you very much. We have no new business that I'm aware of, unless any of the council members have any. Any old business? This is going to be a quick meeting, hopefully. Any old business? The chairman's report, you just received it. Now, the president.
Well, I'd like to tell you a story to begin with, just because Ron has reminded me of this. Okay, when I was in graduate school, I had a real shock 1 week before I was to defend my thesis. Okay, and there was an article that had appeared in the Journal of the American Chemical Society, which is the number one journal in chemistry, on exactly the topic of one of my research things. This is very bad news, okay, because that meant that I'd been scooped. Okay, and if that happens to you in graduate school, you know, sometimes that can mean another year of work, because you have to replace it. So I go down to the library, and my hands are shaking, right? And so I get the copy of the journal, and I look at it, and I say, oh, wait a minute, this is good. Okay, because the guy had done, was trying to find the exact same thing that I was, but he did it in a totally different way. So instead of harming me, it actually helped me, okay? And so I'm there for the defense, and long story short, at the end of it, somebody says, well, what you did was very interesting, but how do you know it's true? So I whip out the copy of the article, and I said, I did it by this method, he did it by this method, he got 24 hertz, I got 25 hertz, that's close enough in anybody's book, right? And the crowd went, ooh. Okay, so we go in for the you know, non-public part of the defense, and they ask the outside guy, do you have any questions? And he says, no, the candidate did a good job. They asked the person outside my area from chemistry, do you have any questions? He said, yeah, just one. Is there anything left to do in boron chemistry? I said, yes. He says, I'm satisfied. Okay? They asked the inside guy, right, from my area, if he had any questions, and he says, no, I'm satisfied. And so I turned to my advisor, and I said, okay, then I'll step out of the room, and I'll let you vote. And he said, not so fast. And proceeded to grill me for an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And yeah, my own advisor. And so afterwards, when they told me that I passed, I said, Odom, I said, why did you do that? I said, you've had 5 years to ask any question you want. He said, if we had let you off that easy, right, you'd have no respect for us. Right? And absolutely true story, it's not embellished. Well, anyway, so after what Ron said, if we'd let you off that easy at this meeting, you'd have no respect for me. Okay, so I've got a couple of things to tell you, and I think, actually, you're going to be very happy to hear. Okay? We have had, I think, really, in the past 2 or 3 weeks, an extraordinary 2 or 3 weeks, okay, in terms of good things happening and coming to fruition that we've been working on for a while. So let me tell you about a couple of them. Okay, and I'm going to give you the headlines, okay, and then have the various other folks at this table, you know, embellish the parts that are relevant to their own areas. Okay, so since we last spoke, okay, we've had two additional degree programs fully approved, both by SUNY and by State Ed. Okay, and this is the Bachelor of Science degree in Cybersecurity and the Bachelor of Business Administration in Early Childhood Care and Management. That latter one is something we've been working on for a while and, you know, kind of had to fight our way through a couple of areas in order to get SUNY to pay attention to it and so forth. But they have, and so we're delighted, and the folks who worked so hard on these are delighted, and both of them will be starting in fall of 2018. And so that's very good news. On the not-so-great news, we're still waiting, after more than a year at State Ed, okay, for approval for our mechatronics submission. You've heard me obviously talk about this before. But the good news there is I'll be meeting with the chancellor later this week, actually in a one-on-one, right, and to discuss a number of issues relevant to the college, and this is one of them. And so I'm hoping that you'll be able to help us get this unblocked and letting us move more into engineering. And so I'll keep you informed at our next meeting as to how that went.
Do you have any inkling as to why it's held up for a year?
I think they're playing rope-a-dope with us. Okay, I think they don't want us to do this.
Why?
Because
who else in SUNY wants to do it?
Oh, no, this isn't SUNY. This is state ed. This is in the Office of Professions in state ed. And so, you know, I don't have...
Why don't they want us to do it? What's your...
Because they're afraid we're going to get this accredited, and they're right, okay, as a degree program in engineering. Okay? And, again, that's none of their business. Okay? They can approve it. They're approving it as an engineering technology degree. And, you know, when I talked to the folks at SUNY, I told them, but what we're going to try to do, okay, is get this accredited as an engineering degree, okay, by ABET, because that's ultimately all that matters. Okay? And I think that they suspect that that may be the case, and they've got no standing to tell us to not do that, okay? But I think they're just stalling as much as they can. And so I'm going to talk to the chancellor.
I don't understand. Why wouldn't they want us to have a degree program that can be accredited at the highest level possible?
That's a very good question. Engineers are very, for longer than I can tell you, engineers and engineering technology folks are like this with each other, even though the reality is that if this is engineering, this is engineering technology. There's like a 60% overlap, okay, between the fields. And the main difference is that, you know, engineers, and, you know, what I'm saying is somewhat true. There's nothing that's totally true. Okay, there's no strict separation between the two fields. But engineers tend to focus more on developing new things, okay, and so they're at kind of the research end of the field. And engineering technology tends to focus on optimization of existing. Okay. And so obviously both are necessary. Many ETs are employed as engineers. Many engineers are essentially employed as ETs. Okay. And so yet there's even though the fields are so similar, right, there's this antipathy between them. And the problem where this shows up is in licensure, okay, where ETs are treated much worse, okay, than engineers. Okay, well, that's really important in the field of civil and in environmental. Okay, it's less important in electrical, and it's not important at all in mechanical. Okay, but if you want to be a licensed professional engineer, right, who signs the thing, okay, in some states, if you're an ET, you can't become one. You just can't do it.
Can't even sit for the exam.
Cannot. Okay, in other states, and this is more common, they will allow you to sit in the exam, but not on the same basis as an engineer. Okay? In other words, if an after you get your degree, they want you to have like 3 years of field experience before being able to sit for the final LPE exam. There are actually two. There's an initial and there's a final. And so you won't be allowed to sit for the final one unless, if it's 3 years for an engineer, it may be 4, 5, 6 years for
an ET. How do New York State? Are you treated differently in New York State for licensure?
Yes, the licensure is different. It's a longer time for an ET. But what's worse, okay, is we've had a couple of students who are in the environmental ET end of the field who have gone to sit a third exam, which is the civil service exam in New York. If you want to get a state job, you have to sit the civil service. And in some cases, while they'll allow somebody with a degree in anthropology or chemistry or whatever to sit that exam, they won't allow an ET. Right? That's insane. Okay? But that's how it is. And we've gotten SUNY to intervene and had some success in getting around that. Okay? But it's just that's an example of how ETs are treated worse, okay, than engineers, even though in many cases they're the better person to hire. Right, and I think that's ultimately what engineers are afraid of, okay, and hence want to, you know, keep this small. Okay, anyway, so I think, so it's complicated, Tom, and I want to get the chancellor on our side, because what I'd like to do, at least, is to get authority to possibly change the civil degree to an engineering degree in the future, just because of this licensure issue. The other two areas, it doesn't matter. Okay, and you know, and again, ultimately we may not go there, but we should be allowed to go there if we want to. And with the mechatronics, they shouldn't be trying to block this.
Right.
Right? It's exactly what you said. We want to get it accredited at the highest level such that our students can have the maximum number of opportunities. And they shouldn't be against that. Okay? And it's also the New York bureaucracy also plays a role in this. You know, you don't want me to get into that. All right, anyway, so but I'm, the chancellor is willing to take the meeting, which tells me I think she's at least got some sympathy towards our situation, so we'll see where this goes. All right, back to good news. We have received 4 grants from the SUNY Performance Improvement Fund. Okay, you may remember from, I think, 2 meetings ago that we told you about our campus visit with SUNY and that we had given them a number of potential initiatives, and they told us that they were going to fund 5 of them, but then they had this long, involved process where at one point they even said, well, the fact that we said we were going to fund it doesn't mean that we're going to give you what you asked, and it doesn't mean that we're going to give it to you for what you asked. Right? So that would mean anything at that point. Okay? Anyway, we've got the answer on 4 out of the 5 of them now. Okay? And I'm pleased to tell you that we got everything we asked for what we asked, and in one case, we got more than what we asked.
Wow.
Okay? And so we proposed doing a new degree in industrial technology management, 4-year degree, that focuses on logistics, okay, doing it online. They gave us $190,000 towards that, which will allow us to, the largest piece of that is to hire a faculty member in that area. Okay, we want to do a similar thing with our 2-year construction degree, bringing that to a 4-year degree and focusing on sustainable construction. They gave us $170,000 for that. We submitted a proposal that I know that Courtney will talk more about to develop a model co-curricular transcript, okay, to capture what our students do outside of class and that focuses on items that people in business will be interested in hearing and things that students will be interested in telling about what they're able to do. They gave us $110,000 for that. And most important, I've saved the best one for last, is we've talked about wanting to really expand in our online efforts. And, you know, all 3 of the ones I already mentioned are for, tied into the online. But, you know, we want to engage our online students in the total life of the college. And that's something that nobody's really done. Okay? And we told them we wanted to take a leadership role in doing this in SUNY. And they agreed. They've given us the leadership role, and they've given us $480,000, right, to do that. So if you add that all up,
great.
Okay, like I said, we got essentially 100%, actually a little more than 100%, of what we requested, and that's really unusual in my experience. And I think it reflects SUNY's belief that we can make a real breakthrough, okay, in the online area. Add that all up, it comes to $950,000, and with one additional proposal that'll be funded to some level, yet to be heard about, for equipment to support our Solar Ready Vets and Alternative Energy degree program. And so it's likely that at the end we'll have more than $1 million. Okay? And these are all solo SUNY Canton grants. In other words, they're not for us and somebody else, it's for us. Okay? So that's very good news. In addition to this, we're also part of an additional one, okay, that to fund promotion of the tech sector in general. And the request, which we actually had written up last year and they ignored, was resuscitated by Morrisville, I think, and resubmitted, and they asked for $1.2 million for that effort. They didn't get that. Okay, they got $120,000, so they got 10% of what they asked, but still, that's money, and we'll get some benefit out of that, too. Okay, so all in all, we were extremely successful in this year's Performance Improvement Fund funding. So we're very proud of that. Now, if that's not enough, okay, for you, we've got 2 pieces of great news from our athletics program. Okay, first, and this literally happened yesterday, okay, is we have been accepted as a full member in the North Atlantic Conference, the NAC, okay, for all sports, okay, except men's and women's ice hockey and golf. Okay? Golf, because they don't do the golf.
Men's golf.
They do women's golf, but they don't do
no,
that.
No, they do men's golf.
Oh, okay, other way around. Okay. And so one of our golf, half of our golf isn't accepted, the other one is. Okay, and the men's and women's ice hockey were going for different leagues. Okay? And so the good news, why that's important, is twofold. First, it's a more compact league than the one we're in now, which means that our travel distances and costs will go down, which is good for students studying and so forth. Okay, it's a better league. Okay, and it is a league that has postseason play in the NCAA. And so up until now, as an independent, we couldn't get postseason play in the NCAA. Now we can. Okay, and so we're going to start in fall of 2018, so the next season. And so we're very, very happy about that. In case you're wondering, well, wait a minute, then what about our hockey teams? Okay, our women's ice hockey team, second bit of good news, has been accepted now into the Northeast Women's Hockey League, okay, NEWHL, okay, starting in fall 2019. And if you don't recognize that name, that's the women's version of SUNYAC, okay? And so that's very good news, okay? And so we're now in there. Okay, that only leaves our men's ice hockey team, and we are in the process, as we speak, of applying for membership in SUNYAC. For our men's ice hockey team. I'm not going to deceive you. That's a long shot.
That was my question when I was reading the paper yesterday. Why aren't all of our teams in SUNYAC?
Well, that's actually twofold. I've asked that question. Okay, with respect to the men's ice hockey team, okay, there are two of the SUNYs have, and I don't know how public this is, so I'd ask you to keep this confidential. Okay, at least two of the other SUNYs have voted against our joining. Okay, I know which two. Okay, I'm going to be contacting a friendlier president who's also the president in charge of SUNYAC and seeing if he has any suggestions as how we might be able to get around this. Okay, I've talked to one of those presidents, and the argument that they give, which frankly I don't buy, but you know, this is what they're saying, is that we have an unfair advantage, okay, in that we offer both two-year and four-year degrees, which allow us to recruit a broader range of students than they can, and thus we would have a greater potential range of student athletes than they do. Okay, that's what they're saying. Okay, I don't buy it. Okay, because there have been one or two students known to enter into a degree program and not graduate from it. Okay, which would make it effectively the same thing. Okay, and so, but that's the reason that they're giving. And I'd like to talk to, like I said, the friendlier ones to say, okay, what's this really about? Okay, and to see if we can do anything about it. And besides which, now that the women's have been accepted into the women's SUNYAC, then, you know, that may put some pressure on the men's to let us in. So, you know, the ground has shifted. Okay, and so we think we've got greater opportunity here, and we're going to go for it. Why not all teams? I've talked to Randy about that. That thought occurred to me as well. And he doesn't think that many of our teams are ready yet, okay, to compete at that level. Okay, and so ice hockey is, and so we don't want to enter a league and then just be at the bottom of it. Okay, you want to be in the middle of the league, so it's a real competition. If you're at the top, you probably should be at a higher one. If you're at the bottom, you shouldn't be in it. You want to be in the middle. Okay, and so long story short, that's the reason. With the other, so the NAC is the right place at the right time for most of our teams. Ice hockey has always been a stronger thing here. That's why we're going for a stronger league there. And so we've had some very good success. Okay, last time I talked to you about three major initiatives, okay, that we were launching at the beginning of the year, and I'm glad to tell you that we have indeed launched. And we're now underway, and these are the personalized pathways, the online enhancement, and the athletic leadership initiatives. Okay, there are now 9 subcommittees that will be working on the pathways effort, and we've got them fully staffed with faculty and staff and students. Thanks, Nikki. Okay, we've got good numbers of students on them as well. And so with regard to the online enhancement, as you just heard, we've gotten the funding that we needed, right? And so we're very happy about that. And with regard to the athletic leadership, not only are they doing things to improve the leadership opportunities for the athletes, but we're going to be announcing in the very near future esports at this campus, okay, which is also part of how we're going to engage online students. Okay, so now they'll be able to be involved in athletics. And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but we just had a meeting yesterday, and we've identified a space on campus, which is where we're going to, I think, put our initial bank of computers that the students will be able to compete with. And we have, I think, the opportunity to have some pretty big industrial partners who look like they're going to possibly help us fund it. And this is a really hot area, and we're going to be the first SUNY to get there. And so I think this will be a very good thing. And you know how everybody likes to have a story to go with these things? And so they had a really interesting story, actually, of a young lady who came to Canton, right, basically to just get some credits, okay, because she had not been accepted at Potsdam to the Crane School. And she was going to take some private lessons to improve her musical skills and take some credits with us and then transfer over to Potsdam. And that's fine. If a student wants to do that, we're obviously happy to help them. Okay, well, she's also a computer gamer. And when she saw our new computer game design program, and when she heard about this, she said, bye-bye, Craig, I'm staying here, and has enrolled in, you know, the gaming program and is, in fact, beginning to practice for the league. And there are more than 30 students have already signed up for that. And so, and we're anticipating that by next fall it'll be over 50. And so, anyway, so that's a nice personal story. So that's pretty cool. We've made some important connections with the Cégeps colleges in Quebec regarding potential partnerships, which will hopefully result in an increased number of Canadian students coming here and some near abroad, study abroad opportunities for our students. Okay, and there are a number of ways that they're interested in working with us, and these are both English-speaking and French-speaking Cégeps. For, in case you don't know the Quebec system, a Cégep is essentially a community college in Canada, and what happens there is students go there first. You cannot go into a four-year public university there. Okay, you have to, you start with a Cégep, and then when you complete with that, then you go into a four-year university there or, you know, wherever. Okay, that's the way their system is set. We're about to sign a memorandum of understanding with Cayuga Community College, okay, very soon about two things. One is housing our dental hygiene program there, okay, and the other is about offering online programs on their Fulton campus. Okay, and so Fulton puts it very near Syracuse, so it's a good location for us. I've already told you that we had some issues with the Rome campus, and so we have to move it. And so they're very interested in hosting it. And we're going to be working to do something similar about offering our online programs and so forth at other community colleges strategically located around the state, which will allow us to bring our brand statewide. And they're all very interested in our converged modality effort, okay, which I've talked to you before about, and having it offered on their campuses. And what's nice about this is that the way that it's set up is that they're going to assign space and computers and support for the students in our programs at no cost to us. Okay, and what they like about it is that they can recruit and say, you'll have a seamless transfer from us to SUNY Canton in your degree, and so it makes their recruiting more effective, it gives us access to more students, and they pay for the facilities. So it's a real good arrangement. We used this down in Georgia with the technical college system of Georgia when I was down there. It worked very nicely there, and so we're trying to do something similar here. And we're off, I think, to a good start, hoping that in, within the next couple of months we'll have two partners. Okay, one, like I said, Cayuga, and I'm optimistic that Niagara is going to join us. and I'm hoping that we'll identify a couple of others as well. And so I think that's very good news. We're also embarking on an effort to work with the Veterans Liaison down at SUNY to make transferability of credits much easier for soldiers transitioning out of the military. We had an extremely positive meeting with folks from the New York State Division of Veterans Affairs who very much wanted us to work with this person at SUNY. And in fact, I got an email yesterday evening from a guy in the office of New York State Division of Veterans Affairs who would like to participate in that meeting, which is going to be on the 4th of December. And so we'll see how that goes. So again, I think it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to help our veterans, and hopefully it'll mean more veterans coming to our college. So it's just good for everybody. And finally, just to talk about a couple of other pieces of good news, while it's very early right now, the numbers for next fall's incoming classes look very good. Okay, the percentage increases are quite solid. And some of that is illusion because of changes in the way SUNY's doing things, but a hunk of it seems to be real too. And so things look very positive. And our initial round of open houses have been very well attended. And finally, in terms of campus resources, and I know Sean will talk more about this, we've completed the upgrades to the Cyber Cafe, to the women's ice hockey locker room. Hope you'll get a chance to go down there and take a look at them. They're really quite nice. And you may have noticed that work has begun on the exterior of Dana Hall, and that's a very big project, and we're happy that things have started there. And something else that you may notice is that our police have now moved from Dana, because of the construction, to the first floor of the bottom floor of Wicks Hall in newly renovated space. And just unpacking the last of the boxes and hanging the pictures and so forth. I stopped by to see it today, just before coming here. And it looks real nice, too. And so those are some of the changes and a lot of good news to let everybody know about. And that's the end of my report.
Just changing in the sports there, does that have any effect on recruitment?
Yes.
I think it's going to have a positive. It's going to have a really positive effect.
A large effect? Or?
It's a great question that I probably can't answer. Yes, it's going to have a large effect. Hope it will.
Right. Athletes want to be able to compete in the NCAA tournament. To this point, we haven't been able to do that. Somehow there's a chance.
And it's an established.
If they're choosing between two schools, they'd probably go with the opportunity to go to the tournament.
Would that be a Division III?
Division III.
All of our teams are Division III. It's also an established conference. The conference we're in right now we helped create, which is wonderful, and it gave us some opportunities this past year for some postseason play. But this is an established conference that has a good reputation, so this is certainly more marketable for us.
We had an article in the Watertown Times this morning about these.
That was Nate, actually. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Anyway, so that's the end of my report, but now let me turn it over to Doug for an academic affairs update.
Sure. Six items, and I'll run through these, and then you can ask questions if you have any. We have two leadership positions that we're searching to replace the folks who are leaving. Our dean of School of Business and Liberal Arts is returning to faculty, so that search is proceeding. We're searching internally for an interim, most likely to serve just one semester in the spring, and that should be wrapping up very soon so that person can step in January. The external search, or external internal, broader search, the search committee is not looking at those until the closing date for applications is January 1, so you get the interim taken care of. But last time I looked, there were 26 applicants already, so a very strong response to that. And the other position that we're searching, Joanne Fassinger, is retiring at the end of December as our direct coordinator of sponsored programs, grants development, and so we are searching for that position. So that search committee is working and hopefully will be submitting their report on the candidates soon. One thing that given the date of our last meeting, I probably didn't report on these. A couple of metrics that I focus pretty closely on in terms of measuring our success for serving our students The most important one, of course, for me is graduation rate, the percent of students who start here who graduate. But along the way, more short measures, first to second year retention rate, the percent of students who start here who come back the next fall. When I arrived here three falls ago, that was 61%. In our SUNY Excel's goals for 2018, we have a 71% goal, and 2020, a 73% goal. This fall's retention rate hit 70%. So we are moving really nicely towards that goal, and that's wonderful. In terms of operating efficiently, a metric that I like to measure how well we're scheduling courses to meet student need without over-scheduling and having empty seats that we're paying, you know, often adjuncts additional expenses to staff and to have underfilled classes. We had a target of 80% seats filled. And 90% is pretty much maximum because on any you have a 30 student cap, you can certainly have in that first week three students drop. So pretty much can't get above 90%. So 80% is a nice goal. Anything above that is great. We started at 76%, which is pretty good practice. And this fall, we hit 80%, so we hit our goal. So that speaks to the deans and the chairs doing good work to just optimize our resources. Is any money that we don't spend hiring an adjunct, we can spend doing other things for our students. Dr. Safran already talked about a couple of things. We do have the new programs, cybersecurity, Bachelors of Science, and Early Childhood Care and Management, Bachelors of Business Administration starting next fall. So we can, nicely, they were approved now, so that admissions has a full recruiting season to recruit for those programs. The ones last year that were approved in the spring, you kind of had to choose, should we just hold off? Because, you know, do we want this program to start with a kind of a fizzle? But so these were approved nicely in the fall, so we can do a full recruiting season. The mechatronics program that Dr. Fran talked about that's in front of, when you submit a program and it goes past SUNY to state ed, it either goes to OQ, and I forget what that is, but that's like Office of Something in College and University Education, or the Office of the Professions, which is any program leading to a license. And that is a deep black hole. And it is worse depending on the profession. And engineering is one of the worst because the program goes to a board that is made up of members of that profession. So in engineering, all of those folks probably got their degrees from a SUNY that offers engineering. And they have allegiance to those programs, which are currently almost exclusively the research centers and Oswego. But so the idea of opening that gate to other campuses sometimes can be sluggish. That program has now been at State Ed under review for approximately 450 days. There's a dashboard there. So we are the poster child for the question that the provost raised to the chancellor at our meeting with her about helping. If we are trying to serve the state, how can we be more agile with response? With new program development in response to workforce and employer needs. The representation I gave to the associate provost who's responsible for this, and I said, so I have an email here from a very large employer in New York State who contacted us this summer and said, we would love for you to offer your online programs kind of a focused cohort at our facility and recruited our students, could you do that? And we said, we would love to do that, and we will submit for this new program immediately, which we did. That was in July, August. This was in October, and I said to them, so last week I got an email from them saying, we're so excited you can do this. We're having an employee advancement fair November 11th, can you come there to recruit students into your new degree program? And so I said to the folks, this is the speed of industry. They contacted us in July and August. And in November, they want to have us recruit students into the new program. Mm-hmm. And I said, 450 days at state ed is the speed of New York State. Somewhere in between there is probably a sweet spot, but that's not it. And if we're going to be more agile and responsive to the state workforce needs, we need to do better than 450 days and counting. So we had a really nice example to point out, this has to be better. And all of this, except the chancellor wasn't there at that particular moment, but all of the SUNY senior leadership was there. And so this actually prompted a conference call with state ed, which was particularly ineffective. But we're at least pointing out we need to do better than this. So mechatronics is still underway. But it also speaks to having an employer reach out to us and say, would you please come to our campus and deliver your online program in a focused way? They were reaching out to us as opposed to other places. So in regard to those two grants that should support new programs, the interesting thing is that both of those grants asked for money to support the building of the rooms with, we're calling them studio classrooms, to support the converged modality or flex class delivery so that the class is delivered to face-to-face students, live streaming online, as well as lecture captured, so students who can't be live, say they're a nurse working a changing shift, can watch that class tonight. But the live streaming students can text in questions, so they can raise their hand and ask a question. And hopefully the idea is that the lecture captured students, compared to a flat, dead online class, can feel like they're in class because they could even text in a question that night when they're watching and send an email, so that the next, on Thursday, the professor can say, so Joan, online in New York City, asked a question based on Tuesday's class saying, I got confused on such and such, could you go over that again? So that it's hopefully going to be, in all ways, an enhanced learning experience for our students. We have completely online programs now where we have students who are local, who would like to be in a face-to-face experience, but we don't have enough students to have an online section and a face-to-face section. So this way, they'll be able to, and we're already piloting this with healthcare management students, and the reaction is very, very positive. We're piloting it further in the spring with nine different professors are stepping in. So the grant is providing the $40,000 to build the room with the enhanced technology, the camera that will follow the professor, the microphones all over the place, the screens that will make this a fully a smooth experience for the students. And we built one of those rooms last summer, so we have the option of taking that grant money and covering those already spent expenses, which then just leaves that money for other things. We're building another one in December that'll be online for the fall, for the spring. So those two rooms are now covered by that, so that's $80,000 that is now back in the our budget that we can use for the planned building of a third room this summer, assuming we have the need for that. We haven't decided which type of room, small, medium, large, for that. But it's supporting what we've already done, and by supplanting money we've already expended, it allows that money to continue to expand that that technology or something else if we want to. So it's pretty exciting. And then also for those local students, the non-technological aspect of these rooms is the kind of policy or pedagogy where the professor can say, if you are local and an adult student, you have the choice on any given day, this is where we call it a flex class, to decide if you're going to come face-to-face, if you're going to live stream it, or you're going to watch it at night. And my example there is that you're planning to come because you're an adult learner, you like the face-to-face experience to ask questions, but the babysitter bails. So you decide to live stream it. So you're going to live stream it and ask questions, but then the babysitter's teething, or you get called into work. So you just go, can't do it, I'll watch the lecture capture tonight, hope to come in and see you on Thursday. But to give the students that complete flexibility to have the most engaging experience they're able to do given their schedule. So I think it's not just about drawing in more students, but it's also about providing a better learning experience for the students we do have. So I'm excited and glad that SUNY is supporting our full online enterprise in all of the different ways that they're doing so, with the online enhancement and the code for transcript and so forth. So I think we're going to have the opportunity to lead, both not just in enrollment numbers, but in quality of experience. And that's another important thing.
Thank you, Doug. Any questions for Doug? It's pretty exciting. And it's getting excellent reception from the community colleges. And I think when we actually are launching it full scale, it'll be good for faculty, it'll be good for students, it'll be great for the college, it'll be great for the state. And so this is just something whose time has come.
I do have one question. So the business that would like us to provide distance learning or online learning for them, how are we responding to them? Is it something we need approval from SUNY or State Ed to do, or can we just do it because
they were asking,
we have the resources?
They were asking for us to expand into a bachelor's degree program that we don't currently have. So we were saying, yeah, we'll absolutely build that bachelor's degree program. We're on it. And they're like, great, let's start enrolling students. And we're like, we'll be on it as soon as we're able to.
Okay. So we've had that discussion with them that
yeah.
dealing with.
And the program announcement went out, which is the way it works is you send out basically a letter of intent, and you have 30 days for other SUNYs to comment. We had no comment. So then you're free to go on to submitting the full proposal, which would come through here to go to SUNY and get approval. So.
And even that part's not so simple in that, again, you'd think that given this is SUNY and they've got lots of schools and lots of expertise, they could decide this themselves. Okay, this is something that is true in most states. It's SUNY, it's not true. You have to get outside evaluators. You've got to find them. They've got to approve them. Okay, once you've done that, then they review it. They make a recommendation to you and to SUNY. They might propose that you change something. You have to change it. Then SUNY considers it and approves it. And so, you know, sometimes that goes really fast. Sometimes it doesn't. And then it goes to State Ed. So this is the craziest system I've encountered. It is what it is. And so we're working within it. We're having good success, except with one. And we're pushing on that.
But this company that thought they could do something in 6 months, they know it could be 2 years.
Hopefully something 2 years. But, you know, we could do is say, you know, we are on board. The nice thing is that what they've had is they have a community college who's doing the associate and they have a master's degree program lined up. And they said, we just need a way to get our employees who were doing the community college to fill that gap so they can do the whole chain. So in theory, we do have some time to capture that chain. But I don't think anyone else is as strong in the bachelor's degree online area, so I think we're in good shape there.
And, you know, and the chancellor is well aware of this problem. She's heard it from the provosts. She definitely has heard it from the presidents. I mean, there was an eruption at the last president's meeting on this from just about every president, right? And so she is well aware that this is a big problem and that it needs to be addressed. And she'll hear more about it from me. Administrative affairs update. Sean?
So I just have a few, really. We filed our reprojections for our enrollment and our dollars in October. We did hit our targets, so what that means to me is for fall semester, even though we were down 39 students, tuition went up $200, and so we still were within our projected targets. So that's good because they already, 2 weeks ago, allocation came up. So our allocation is based on our initial target, which we submit May 1st. So the fact that in October we actually came into that dollar range, even though we didn't hit our number target, we hit our dollar target. So that's all that matters to me. It means we don't have to pay any money back. UUP contract, still not finalized. I don't know if Brian will have any information on that. I did put money in reserve this year for the contract. UUP, again, will be retroed probably to July 2016. CSEA contract will be retroed to April 2016. So I did set aside reserves for that when I built the budget. So hopefully we'll be all covered with that. As the president mentioned, University Police has moved from Dana Hall to Laura Wicks. We expect them to be there for up to 2 years while the construction takes place in Dana Hall. I talked to Al this morning. They are getting settled in. He thinks it's going to be okay, that the space is going to work out for them. So that's good, because I was really concerned about that. As far as our construction, like the president talked about, we did a major renovation in the Cyber Cafe, which is the food service location inside the library. I think it's really beautiful. We expanded the seating and the menu, and it's just a really nice space right now. If you get an opportunity to go to the library, it's beautiful. We also did a lighting project upstairs and added restrooms upstairs, which we never have. So I understand that the students are very happy about that. So that's all good. Dana Hall, we're working on the outside right now. We did the bids we got the bids for the design for the inside. Cheney Dining Hall, we have the bids for that. That came in, if we take the low contractor, $500,000 low, but we're not sure about the contractor, whether we, whether they're going to be able to handle a project that size or not. So what that means for Cheney Dining Hall is, in May, we will be shutting down the dining hall, and we will be serving meals out of Dana Hall Gymnasium with an exterior kitchen. So, and that will happen until January of 2019. So that's going to be a big challenge. I think we're up for it. And the only other thing in my area is the Director of Human Resources had submitted their retirement paperwork. We have a search for that. Hopefully today we will have a recommendation and make an offer by this afternoon for a candidate. We had not a huge pool, but we had a good solid pool. So we were very pleased, because Dave Rourke has been a huge asset to our campus, and he'll be hard to replace. So.
And we had 5 candidates, all of whom were excellent. And so it's a very nice situation to be in. Any questions for Sean? Okay, thank you. Advancement, Anne?
Yeah. Give a quick update on some of the things that we're working on. Our year is progressing well, and we're tracking ahead of last year in our fundraising, but we're anxious to see what the numbers are as November progresses, because our fall appeal and the aftercan have just gone out in the last few weeks. And hopefully many of you have gotten an aftercan already in your mailboxes. If you haven't, it should be there soon. And I recommend that you read it cover to cover. It's got some great stories and a nice piece about the 50-year anniversary of the campus, with some really interesting history that the PR folks dug out as they did some more research on it.
Good job.
We are continuing on our goal of having more events this year, which is one of our primary ways that we reach out to and engage alumni and find new people who might become donors or larger donors. We're especially aiming to do more in New York State, because that's where the majority of our alumni live. So we don't do a lot in December typically. That's a tough month for events because of the holidays. But we're trying a few very small Coffee with the President events in communities nearby in early December, and hoping that will bring a few new people, some new faces to interact with us. And then January becomes the very busy time where we'll have another event in New York City, but it's also the time for multiple trips to Florida. And so January, February, March is a lot of time in Florida, Arizona, Texas, those sorts of places where we get to appreciate a little of the sunshine, and we drag the president down there to meet with alumni. We have a lot of great donors and great alumni down there, and happy that we continue to uncover new ones. Now, the 50-year anniversary is a big piece of our year this year. We're emphasizing that in many of our communications, and will be throughout the year. And it's also going to be a big piece of Reunion Weekend, which is the first weekend in June. And so we are expecting to hold a large dinner in that Friday night, where we will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of this campus being opened. And keep your ears open. those plans now as to how we will make this a special reunion and celebration of the 50 years. We are aiming for 1,968 donors this year. That is 1968. That's the 50th reunion class, the first class that lived and had classes on this campus, and then the first class that graduated on this campus. So that's a high target for us compared with past years, but that's our goal, is to get 1,968 donors, so I hope all of you will be a part of that as well. Today is Giving Tuesday, and you may have, if you're involved in our Facebook page at all, or Twitter, Instagram, or get their emails from our office. It's mainly on social media that we're promoting this. Giving Tuesday is an international day of giving. It was developed as a sort of a counter to the commercialism and consumption of Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And so you've probably seen lots of notices from charities that are pushing Giving Tuesday, and we're reaching out to our potential donors as well on Giving Tuesday. And there are some of our places on campus that were named by donors' gifts. There are bows hanging up next to those in recognition of those contributions. Now, President Zifran has helped us, helping us this year in both in acquiring new donors and just getting the visibility out there. He has given a challenge grant, challenging never donors, what we call them, people who, alumni who've never given before, to make a gift this year, any size. And so his $5,000 this year will match dollar for dollar any alum who makes a contribution. So we're pushing that as well in our communications, and we'll be doing that all year, and we hope to get a lot of new people becoming donors thanks to that challenge. Now, he pledged out for 5 years, so we have 4 more years of challenges that we'll be able to use. Perhaps we'll choose to continue to try to get new donors, or maybe we'll focus on young donors, and so we're very, very grateful that he's boosted our efforts in this way. Now, another nice consequence of that is that other people have noticed that we're doing these challenges, and so one staff member, Amanda Deckard, and her husband have put together a challenge grant as well. And they were disappointed to hear that alumni from their era, which 2009 and 2012 are their graduation years, that very few of them give. It's the younger alumni. It's a big challenge, and it's definitely a group that we target. So Amanda knows very well, we have a student emergency fund, which is a fund that helps students out when they are in dire need. Courtney's office administers it. You know, they assess what the need is and help the other student what they need. But, you know, they see things like students who don't have a winter coat or lose their transportation so they can't make it to and from college, or they need a bus ticket home because a family member just died, things like that. And Amanda knows very well what a need this is. So she and her husband have pledged $5,000, and they're challenging the classes between 2009 and 2012 to match that. So that is just getting out there and just getting put together where that challenge will go on, and we hope there will be a good response. In cases like that, we're really looking to them and their friends to be peer solicitors and reach out to their friends and encourage people to give. So we're hopeful that we can make a lot of progress with this. Likewise, we're working very closely with athletics on fundraising. Lots of colleges have a strong athletics fundraising program, and it's often the coaches who play a very large role in that. So there's a couple of coaches who are really enthusiastic about that, and the men's hockey coach in particular had done a nice drive this summer, getting 70 donors in 70 days. So we're working closely with them and with Randy Siminski to give them the tools that they need so that the coaches can all do more fundraising on their own, supported by us, but not drawing us away from our primary fundraising goals. We can't give up on our fundraising for the scholarships and camp fund. So we're pretty excited about that, because they're going to be working on, like, naming hockey locker room stalls and getting more seats named in the hockey arena and just raising money for the teams. We've been really happy to see this year. We've got a number of people who have already made new endowment gifts for scholarships, and that's always very exciting to see. I think we have four that have already materialized when the gift has been made, and a couple more where people are planning to make the gift in January or February. And that's a nice momentum that we're feeling. So with all of that, we're feeling very positive. The sort of a low point is we're losing one of our staff members, a gift officer. So we have an ad that's going out this week, and we're going to need to replace that person. And if you know anyone who has fundraising experience and would like working in our office, especially if they're an alum, direct them to the ad and ask them to apply. We're always interested in good candidates.
Any questions for him? So lots of good news there, and in fact...
I have a question, Ann. This tax reform, which I'd like to tell you all how I feel about that, but you don't have time. I understand that part of that tax reform is private colleges' endowment income is going to be taxed, and state universities are exempted. Have you heard much from the private universities about that?
I have.
I mean, you know,
P.T. Yeah.
Barnum would be really proud of this.
It's one of those problematic issues where people are looking at college endowments and feeling like they're getting away with something, where really it is an investment that helps provide funds to support the college. There we had to deal with initiative in SUNY this spring where there was a push to tax the SUNY college foundations, and the same motivation, the sense that there's money that should be going.
Where was that coming from?
The legislature. Yeah. Fortunately, it was quashed, but apparently it has cropped up in the past. So we're hopeful that it is quashed. It raises a lot of questions because donors give money, and we are legally required to use it in the way and manage it in the way that the donor has requested. And so if a donor gives money to, say, the Canton College Foundation, they know that they are giving it to the foundation. Now, maybe they're giving it for a scholarship. We can only spend it on the scholarship. If they're giving it to an endowment, we can only spend it according to the spending plan set by the College Foundation Board. If someone gives to the Canton Fund, we can only spend it according to the mission of the foundation, which is to support SUNY Canton. So it's hard to imagine that you could have, say, the state or SUNY take foundation dollars, donor dollars, and spend them on something else because it would not match what the donor gave it to. So I think the same, well, I don't know, there are other people who know more about taxes. We just hope that does not go through. It would be a very bad precedent.
And Ron, at a couple of meetings of the Associated Colleges, the presidents of Clarkson and St. Lawrence have obviously said a word or two about this. There's a threshold, okay? So you've got to have basically more than such and such in revenue from your endowments and so on. And colleges are very much... working to stay under that threshold, okay, by moving things around and so forth. And I think both of our local ones are under the threshold, but if it were over it, they were talking about it costing as much as $500,000, right, to, cover this. And, you know, that's obviously money that's not going to be available to support students.
You just wonder what's going on. I read an article, maybe read it a few days ago, that certain segment of the political people in the United States, 57% are questioning the value of higher education. It's unbelievable. I don't understand what's happening here.
It's 57% of one political party.
I didn't want to say that.
Well, it is. I mean, on the whole, people are still supportive, but in one political party, and I'll name it if you want me to, but, you know, that number of people who think that college is a positive force in this country is down to like 37%. And that's a scary thing. You know,
so
from
are they
where
now
I
sending
sit.
Their children or grandchildren to college just saying skip it?
There are people who aren't. Okay, and it's a problem. And you know, percentage of males going to college is much lower than females now. Okay, that's a problem. And you know, the gap between, you know, what somebody with a college degree earns on average and somebody without a college degree on average has never been larger, either in dollars or in percentage terms. Okay, both are at all-time highs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so it's this is crazy time.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're not doing it, you know, you've really got to be crazy.
Yeah.
And they don't attend, you know, attend college, and that's part of the group that sit back and look for somebody else to blame rather than getting off their butt and doing something.
But speaking of myself, I'm a naturalized citizen from Jamaica. I've lived here for decades and decades. Individuals in the immigrant community, no matter what group you are, education is huge in immigrant communities. You know, in the American community, I can go into other segments, but I speak as a person who have become naturalized. So it just depends on the community that you're coming from and your perspective, I suspect. You know, forget about the party, I'm not even going to go there. But as a naturalized citizen in these United States, which have been very good to me over 40 odd or more years, our immigrant community values good education. So you won't see a person of that group, no matter who they are, whatever nationality or thing, going into that. And I think there's another big part of America, the immigration, our people of, you know, immigrants. And most of us, all of us, have had that history somewhere down the line.
And, you know, just to make a point that I hope is obvious to everybody, you know, when you listen to the people who are critical of higher education, you know, the stuff that they're saying in some cases is real. Okay, I mean, higher education isn't perfect, okay, and none of us would claim that it is. Okay, however, when you look at the kind of criticisms that turn up the most often about, you know, colleges that offer esoteric courses and climbing walls and, you know, they can get a degree program in basket weaving and, you know, that sort of thing, that everything is so politicized on campuses and so forth, that doesn't describe this campus at all, right? You look at the degree programs that we offer. Every single one of them leads to a job. When you look at what our main focus is, it's in producing graduates who are ready to hit the ground running and help New York State's economy to prosper. When you look at what our efforts are, it's all in the areas of economic development. When you look at the new degree programs, every one of them is tied to an important industry, right, for the North Coast. Okay, when you look at what our administrators are doing, we're involved on the boards of our hospitals, right, of our schools, of the county economic development, the town economic development, the village economic development, the state economic development. That's what we're doing. Okay, this is a very practical college, right, where we're all about our students' success. We're not a political place. Okay, and, you know, and we're doing, you know, things that I would hope that every American could support. And, of course, we're a very bad example, therefore, for somebody who wants to score some cheap political points, because we don't fit that profile at all. Okay, we are, in fact, what I would hope everybody would advocate for colleges doing, and that's what we do. So... anyway, any other questions for Anne? Okay, Barrett, Faculty Senate.
So in October at our plenary, this was the first time that we had seen the Chancellor, and she gave a presentation to us with her values, which included access, excellence, innovation, outreach, and scale. And she did seem to really recognize the full scale of SUNY, and I think she said some positive things about looking at what each sector does contribute. When I gave our presentation for the tech sector, we we wanted to go bold, so we really did make many of the statements that you've heard today about how practical our students are, about what we contribute to economic growth and development in our communities, about the applied learning piece and how we're really leaders there. And so I think instead of us saying, you know, can't you just recognize us for what we do, because it kind of has felt like we've been doing that for a couple of years, we just said this is what we're kind of planning on showing you how we lead in these areas. So one of the plans is to have a conversation with disciplines, with the tech sector kind of leading the way in terms of applied learning. That was something that we spoke about doing. Other things that happened, let's see. General education was a big topic, and that's going to be a faculty-driven process, and they don't think that those will actually be rolled out in terms of changes for 5 years. So it's a 3-year process. Right now, faculty are really involved in trying to find best practices in general education. I think the belief is that we should have at least diversity and inclusion as one of our general education requirements, and I think it's actually about time that we did make that a priority. But after that 1 year of collecting data, then we're going to try to build a plan and then a rollout for the 3rd year, thinking about policy and things of that nature. So again, 5 years down the road, seeing those changes come to campuses. Also, I've been sort of trying to get our faculty on board with joining some of the subcommittees, the standing subcommittees at the SUNY level. I'm currently the only SUNY Canton representative on all those subcommittees. So I think in the spring, I'm going to make a big push for us to join some of those. I think it's time that our voice is heard on a much larger scale. And then lastly, we passed several resolutions, and we brought those to campus. And at our faculty assembly, we did present those resolutions and ask for support, including recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day as opposed to Columbus Day on our calendars. That was supported at our faculty assembly. Free menstrual products for all SUNY campus restrooms. This was a bit of a heated discussion at our own faculty assembly, but we support the notion that if there are programs out there that can supply menstrual products for our students who we know are often have financial insecurity, then we should be doing whatever we can to support students' needs. In all restrooms means that we do think that at least some bathrooms that are gender inclusive should have these products for any of our potentially trans students. Other than that, there's not a lot that would be relevant for our campus, but you may have heard some of the stuff. For example, the Board of the Charter School Committee for the SUNY Board of Trustees passing their own ability to educate their own teachers, and we are strongly disagree that this should be allowed, so we also passed a resolution on our campus supporting that we do not believe that this should be followed through on. Other than that, I think that's about it.
Any questions for Barrett? I'd mention, with regard to what she said about the Colleges of Technology working with the Chancellor, there is going to be a meeting of the presidents of the Colleges of Technology with the Chancellor, separate meeting, middle of December. And so I'll be taking part in that. And with regard to applied learning, I had the pleasure of speaking at the 4th SUNY Conference on Applied Learning, which was in Niagara Falls a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I was on a panel of 3 presidents. We were talking about what we did applied learning-wise on our campuses, and afterwards about half the people at the conference came up to me and said, oh God, you guys are so far ahead of us. Right? And so that was a very good thing to hear. And so, you know, again, people are recognizing, I think, what's going on here, and what Barrett is pushing for us to be more active within some news exactly on that. Travis, public relations?
Sure. As Ann mentioned, After Canton rolled out last week, so hopefully each got a copy. If you didn't, let Ann or I know, and we'll make sure you get one. She challenged us to redesign the whole publication, and we did, and I think we succeeded, and it's probably the best publication we've put out.
It looks really
good. I probably say that every year, but I think this one definitely is. It's definitely the largest. We went to 36 pages, so really great job on my staff. The highlight story was the 50-year, the building of the campus. A lot of you probably know that story, but hopefully there's some fun facts there that maybe you didn't know. As part of our 50-year celebration, we are also taking a look at 50 acts of kindness. We had some committee meetings, and some folks said, you know, we do a lot of community service. Why don't we highlight some of that, put a number to it? So we can definitely get to 50. That's not a problem. So we're at 25 right now, so we're right on pace. And you may have seen the article in the Watertown Daily Times in the last couple of days about the 50 acts. So some of the ideas, or some of the campaigns that our students are working on, were we had 3 different groups working on donations to Puerto Rico. So that was great. Melissa Evans actually was gathering donations for the animals of Puerto Rico, which I thought was rather unique. And the governor said probably had one of the bigger truckloads of supplies that went down. So very pleased with that. Our alternative renewable students went over to the Burtsfoot farm and helped them hook up some solar panels to power their farm. So again, another applied learning feature here. Our construction technology students went over to the North Country Children's Museum and helped them build out their facility, which I think is a really big deal for the local community. We got some awards for our military friendliness. We got the whole trifecta. There are only three that you can win in academics, so we got all three, military advanced education, GI jobs, and military times. So big thanks to Patrick Massaro for doing some hard work there to make sure everyone in the military knows about SUNY Canton. As you've heard from all the different areas so far, we have a lot of big things going on, so look out in the news. Definitely see some stories over the next month. Probably our biggest success of this past fall was the game design lab, the digital design studio, featuring our game design program and our technological communications program. It's a great facility if you get a chance to walk over there and check it out. It's pretty high tech. We had a great open house. SUNY wanted to feature it in their blog, so the chancellor retweeted it. So that's a really big deal for us and puts us ahead of our competitors in SUNY. So with that, I'll take any questions you might have.
After Canton, I don't exactly know what he changed, but it was noticeable.
Good.
It really was nice. I found it.
Yeah. We are shifting up the timeline. Usually we release it in the fall. I think it makes a little more sense to shift it to spring. So you'll get a smaller version this coming spring, and then you'll have a little wait before the next spring when we go back to the full 36-page document. So
the only question I have is, do you have to pay Danny Fay every time you...
Yeah, he's everywhere, right? But he's been here for 50 years,
yeah. It's the 50-year... I've never heard of somebody actually doing 50 years before. Yeah. I've seen people in the 40s, but I've never seen a 50. So
he's good for another 20, probably.
Yeah.
I felt a good job, bro.
Thank you.
Yeah, really good.
Any questions beyond that for Travis? Okay, Courtney, student affairs.
Okay, so... as Dr. Safran already mentioned, we're really excited about joining the NAC. That was a long and adventurous trip that we took to Maine for a one-hour meeting, about 18 hours worth of travel for the one-hour meeting, but obviously it paid off. It's excellent to be a part of this conference. I do think it'll help us with recruiting new student athletes, and we're all very excited about that. As far as the PIF grant that we received for both the online student engagement and for the co-curricular transcript, Molly Mott and I have been doing a lot of work and have made a lot of headway on this already. We actually presented it to Open SUNY webinars in the past month and a half, and have received a lot of accolades from other schools who didn't think of doing anything like this and are now going, well, we really should engage our online students. This is great. We like being first. The grants are giving us an opportunity to hire a person who will be able to manage this process. Molly and I have been doing a lot of lower level work in trying to manage and get this project up and running, to run our software, to get our co-curricular transcript running. So we're really thankful for the opportunity to bring a person on board who can get this really off and moving well. And will assist with some of our costs for the software, which, you know, their annual costs and startup costs. So that's a bigger piece of my side of the grant. Dr. Safran also mentioned the student leadership program for student athletes. A big piece of what they're doing right now is called Bruce Path to Graduation, which is a early intervention program for student athletes. We've always had an intervention program with athletes who might be having challenges in the classroom. This is actually an amped up approach, which is modeling TRIO. They do an excellent job and have a great retention rate between semesters and from fall to fall because of the work that they do with their students. And so we have a coach, our men's basketball coach, is actually working directly with TRIO to help utilize some of their strategies to work with our student athletes. And we've got, I think, 54 student athletes right now. We're working through Bruce Path to Graduation and already seeing tremendous success with that. So we hope to continue to grow that program with the coaching staff and with TRIO. We're really thankful for their support. Our teams, our volleyball won their first ACAA championship this year, which was phenomenal. And our men's basketball and women's basketball are both off to a great start. The men just won their first game on the road at CUCA, and their men's basketball is 1-4, and women's basketball is 1-3. So it's early. We have relatively new coaches. We have a brand new women's basketball coach, which is exciting. I think the women's basketball team shows a lot of promise this year. And our men's basketball coach is in his second season, but with a nearly brand new team. So we're looking forward to seeing what they do. NCAA convention this year is in Indianapolis. Dr. Safran, myself, Randy Siminski, and Liz Brown, who's our faculty athletic rep, will all be traveling to Indianapolis. And I'm really thankful, and I know Randy is as well, for the support from Dr. Safran and the college in general to keep us up to date in the NCAA. I think it's an important piece of our relationship with athletics. Housing numbers are good. We're stable this year. Right now we're at 1186 students in housing. Last year we were at 1178, so it's, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. We've had more disciplinary suspensions this year than last year at this time, so that's impacted the numbers, but obviously not enough to make a difference. We're still up. And on that note, we're actually analyzing student conduct at this point and reviewing our processes and looking at the way that we do conduct on campus. It's been a challenging semester student behavior-wise, and it is cyclical. Student behavior tends to come and go. One semester is great, and the next semester can be a little wild, but it's still important for us to reevaluate and look at what we do and make sure that that's consistent and that we're doing our best for our students to have an educational response. We like to keep students as best as we can, and so I think that's an important piece. And our SUNY Canton EMS organization, who's now in their second year, was recognized by Canton Fire and Rescue this year for the work they do on campus, which was a nice community recognition. They got a nice plaque, and there was a little ceremony, and then Dr. Safran also had a dinner to recognize them, which was really great for a brand new student organization, so we're thankful for that as well. And then that is my report. If anyone has any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions for Courtney? Okay, now, you're not on the agenda, Brian, but I know that you're here.
So yes, actually, I had let Michaela know that I was scheduled for jury duty, but I called and apparently they didn't need me, which I was very thankful to be here today. So it was a last-minute add-on. But I can answer any questions you have regarding the contract. As far as I know, I actually was speaking with our president and some statewide representatives of the union on the negotiation team where we are. I know there's a lot of angst as far as, is this going to be settled before the end of the year? We are currently working to get on the state's calendar. We're one of five contracts that are in the queue to be settled. And I can tell you a little bit about what the delays are if you're interested in knowing that. We tend to look at what the other bargaining units get as far as trying to get a feel for what our contract will likely look like. And right now, 2% is pretty much standard. Seems that most unions are getting 2% raises. And I want to commend Dr. Zafran and the administration for being prudent about setting monies aside for the retroactive aspect of this, because it does look like it will be retroactive. Again, none of this is set in stone. It's all currently being negotiated. But one of the main sticking points appeared to be the health care. And so right now they're going back and forth about the health care issue in regards to, is there going to be an increase in the copay? Who's going to be responsible for that increase? Is it going to be mainly the employee that's going to pay that? Is there going to be any contribution from the employer? So that's one of the points. The other thing is the discretionary monies. I'm sure you've all heard of DSA and DSI, and of course we're arguing that there's some type of step system where those monies are given to employees based on some type of measurable performance or some other type of process, as opposed to a one-time cash allowance that's at the discretion of the president. So there are basically a few issues, but those are the two main issues that are kind of in flux right now, and that's pretty much all I know as far as where we stand with the contract. So we're waiting for the state to respond back as far as a next meeting date and when we can continue the negotiations.
Are you involved at all with retiree benefits, or once the individual is retired, is that pretty well set?
It's set. Once
so
they retire,
involved
it's set.
In anything about the retirees in negotiations at all?
Well, the contract, it's universal as far as how it applies across the board. So we negotiate it with them in mind as well.
But you don't negotiate anything for retirees, are you?
Well, the way it works is it's the type of system where whatever the rules are that are in effect when you retire is what you actually are entitled to. So, do you have anything?
I was going to say, are they negotiated by the tiers, right?
By tier, correct. So when I started 10 years ago, it was tier 4. We're already up to tier 6. Depending on where you are 5 to 10 years from now, that'll be what your benefits package will be allotted based on what tier you joined in.
So how could a retiree lose benefits?
Well, right now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they have had some discussions regarding whether or not people should have to pay into the union system. Some people are saying essentially that they don't want to actually join a union. Right now, our system, our benefits for our health care, our dental, are tied in with our benefits package for the union. So you're a de facto member of the union in that you are what we call an agency fee payer. You pay the fee, but you don't actually join the union unless you sign the card and become an actual member. So in some states, there's been some discussion regarding whether or not employees should be allowed to opt out. And if they were allowed to opt out, then ultimately the union benefits package thing could kind of collapse if there aren't enough people paying into the union to keep those benefits active. The retirement thing, I mean, if they change the legislation as far as the payments and how they're going to fund it, then that could definitely impact people who are already retired.
At one point, Ron, when I was negotiating for the teachers union, they told us that once a contract has ended, the retirees are covered under that, but that contract is null and void.
Correct. Yeah, and that's one of the things about the contract that makes this so difficult is a lot of people feel that we'll get as good of a contract as we had with the last contract, but every time you open the contract, every item we open, which we have to be very strategical about how we open items, every time we open a section, everything in that section is open for renegotiation.
Is there built in a cost of living increase for retirees?
I don't believe that there is a cost of living increase for retirees. It's based on...
I know that they do get them.
Or is it part of the original contract?
Six years or something like that?
Is there part of the original
contract? It's on cost of living.
I do not know, but I think...
It's based on the same thing as Social Security.
Right, but it's not an annual. It's not an annual increase.
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And I guess I should correct one thing that Brian said in terms of giving credit to me, right, for making sure that the administration has put aside sufficient funds to cover this. This is actually all of Sean's good work. And so the credit should go to her. And so, and of course, it's the prudent thing to do, and it's the right thing to do. And we always try to do what's right here. Okay, so any other questions for Brian? And so to wrap it up, the young lady whose last name starts with a Z, Nikki Zaitzman, and student government.
All right, so I just have a few things to update y'all on. The first thing is more on the sad end, so I'm going to give you sad news first and then move into more positive side of things. So the sad news is we actually are having a change in our student government staff. Our budget director, Brittany Ruff, is going to be leaving us at the end of the semester, and so she and I and the whole board are currently in the process of finding her replacement for the spring semester. So it's sad to see her go, but she is a vet tech student. She's already taken her licensure exam and she's passed that, and so she's moving on to online classes for the next semester, so she's going to stay at home in New York City to complete her experience here and then graduate in May. So we're very excited for her and her future, but we're sad to see her go. So with that being said, we do have two candidates that we are currently looking at, and we need to make a decision by the end of this week on, which we will announce. We have our budget and Senate meetings this week, so we're looking to present the candidate that we're most inclined towards to to the Senate meeting so that way we can get some student input as well and make sure that we're completing the process as fairly as possible as far as getting student involvement and who they would like to see as their next budget director. So that name will be announced by the end of the week. So you keep a close ear, listen for who the new budget director will be for next semester. Moving on to the more fun side of the news on the students. We went to the student assembly in Albany this semester, and there was a lot fewer resolutions this semester than normal. Normal there's like around 10 or 12. We had about 4 or 5 resolutions that the student voting delegates looked at. And so some of those, just for your awareness, included water quality testing on the campuses, making sure that the water is safe for each campus. Not a problem here at this one. Student representation at the community college level, as far as student representatives sitting on different committees and boards on campus. We saw that some community colleges in the student system were struggling with having students be able to participate and sit on boards or just getting students enough involved to the point where they would want to sit on boards for those couple of years that they're there for. So that has been passed and they're looking to, take on some of what we so graciously have here at SUNY Canton. It's nice to not have that problem to get students to sit on committees on this campus. So these community colleges are catching up to that level. We also had the legislative agenda and a couple of other more minor resolutions that don't necessarily pertain to us here at SUNY Canton that we looked at. We also got to meet the chancellor for the first time. That was very nice. It looks like it's going to be very positive to have somebody who is, so vigilantly involved in the STEM programs. It's great for our campus specifically. Student feedback on the new programs that were added. We've kind of been asking around to get an idea of how students are feeling about these new programs that we're adding to curriculum, and a lot of students, I've heard nothing but positive feedback. They're really excited about the game design, the new lab that just came out, especially the new facilities and updates that are being made, such as Cyber Cafe. The seating area is very popular with the booths. If you haven't gotten a chance to go look at it already, please, I invite you to go. It's a very nice atmosphere, nice with the menu change and more additions, later hours for students to get their coffee fix later at night. So it's a very, very positive feedback as far as the students are concerned with the progression that's going on campus. For the student atmosphere is the last point I wanted to make. This semester we've seen a very positive increase in this particular freshman class as opposed to last year or even the year before. The student involvement wasn't as high on the levels as it's been this semester. It's been really great to see more students wanting to get involved. We had a very good turnout, Carnival of Clubs, which we had at the beginning of the semester, which was really nice to see students want to get involved in clubs and organizations on campus. So the numbers are increasing in the clubs, and we already have expansion of a couple of new clubs that have been added to campus atmosphere as well, as well as the advancements of Courtney and RJ Mattimore for helping with the online student involvement as well. It's been very, very positive reflection from the student body. They're very, they're like, oh, that's a great idea. Why didn't we think of that before? You know, which I guess is the million-dollar question. And it's great that we're taking the lead in that, so I'm very excited on this campus about taking the lead on the student involvement. Dr. Spann has said already. Another big pointer that I believe Travis had made was that students have been very active in fundraising on campus this semester specifically. Typically, there's one focus a semester that I've noticed over my past couple years of being involved in SGA, and students tend to focus more in one area or another, either more club involvement or semester, there's been a very positive increase in fundraising, especially with the hurricane relief programs. But it's very close to a lot of students. My family's from Houston. They got impacted pretty bad. I know plenty of students' family in Florida, Puerto Rico, the Caribbean islands. There's been a lot of really great fundraising relief for that, as well as medical fundraising, such as breast cancer awareness, leukemia, a lot of really positive things going on from the students' end on this campus this semester. So we're looking to lead into next semester, end this one strong, lead into the next one even stronger, and continue the good work that the students are doing.
And as I mentioned before, with regard to the personalized pathways initiative that we're doing, each of the 9 subcommittees has at least 1 student member. I think the majority of them have 2, and perhaps not surprisingly, the one that has the most is the leadership one, right? Because the students are very interested in increased opportunities for student leadership, and I think there's 7 or 8 of them on that.
I think there's 7.
Yeah. And so, so we're very happy that they're participating, and we thank Nikki for her good work in helping us gain these volunteers and maybe twist a couple of them.
Nikki, when you have a SGA board meeting, do you have public participation? You know what I mean? Are others, everyone invited?
Right, yes. So all of our budget and Senate meetings that we hold biweekly, they're public knowledge. Anybody is invited to walk in and sit and participate. The public isn't necessarily able to be voting delegates the way that the student club senators are, so they don't have a hand in the voting process, but they are welcome to come and during open forum bring up points, ask questions, get clarification. We always encourage students, even faculty and staff. We've had a lot more faculty and staff show up, especially from the Ready Center. They've made sure to make it a point to have at least 1 member come each biweekly meeting that we hold, just to stay aware and update on what's going on with the clubs and organizations on campus and what's going on in student life. So it's really great to see that. So yes, if you're up for coming and sitting in our meeting, you're very much welcome to and see how everything's run. Unfortunately, I'm not at meetings this semester due to class schedule, but I'll be there again next semester. And yeah, it's been a really great semester with this board, and it's been nice seeing more students speak up during open forums and, you know, raise more awareness on not just negative things, but positive things going on around campus as well.
Do you get most of your feedback in the meetings, or do you get more like one-on-one?
It varies.
Both.
Yeah, typically it varies from semester to semester, but we've been seeing more feedback from the meetings this semester. Not as many students have been coming to us on a one-on-one basis, even though our office hours are there, our doors always open. So not as many emails with necessarily problematic experiences this semester, which is good to see.
You know, it's interesting. I've had a chance, because Nikki introduced me, to talk with several of the SUNY student leadership group, right? And, of course, I know Mark Cohen, who is the SUNY student president and serves on the Board of Regents, okay, because of that. And, you know, one of the things that they keep mentioning, which, you know, is certainly gratifying to hear, is that, the students here at SUNY Canton are much more involved with our administration, with, having their voice heard on campus than is apparently the case at most other places. And so, you know, the other ones who I talked to are always really interested in, you know, how do we get our presidents, how do we get our campus leadership to, you know, let students have a greater voice. And so, you know, we were the only campus, for example, on the campus visits to SUNY, brought a student, okay, with us, and that brought a union rep, for that matter, okay, and, we try to do this across the board, as many committees as is practical, right, and, we meet regularly with our student government leaders, including later today, and we're having lunch with them, And so, you know, it's very important, I think, to have the student voice heard. Something that, you know, Courtney and Anne mentioned, just, you know, kind of a nice human interest story, is yesterday I got a phone call at 5:15 in the morning. Okay, and as I think you all know, I give my phone number to the students, so if there's ever, you know, some sort of problem that they can't solve some other way, I want them to call me. Well, a student took me up on this at 5:15 in the morning because they were driving from New York City up to Canton to come back after the Thanksgiving break. And their car slid off the road, okay, just before Tupper Lake. And nobody was hurt, thank God. And there was a second car with friends of theirs coming, and they slid off the road. Okay, so they were stranded in Tupper Lake. There were six of them. Okay, there, and so they wanted to know what we might be able to do to help them. And so, you know, Anne had mentioned the emergency fund, and that's the first thing that came to mind. And so I texted Courtney, and because I didn't want to wake her up at 5:15, but she called me within 30 seconds.
I have a 1-year-old, so.
Well, I thought this might be the one night he'd let her sleep.
I have 1,100 students on campus and a 1-year-old in my house. I'm always awake.
Yeah, and so, you know, so we quickly did logistics in terms of what we could do. We found out, okay, there is no public bus service that goes through Tupper Lake. That's too bad. It goes through Saranac instead. And anyway, there's no place to rent a car in Tupper Lake. And so we arranged, we had six volunteers all ready to go down, we wouldn't have sent all six, but volunteered to go down and, you know, pick up the students and bring them back. Fortunately, this thing ended somewhat differently, okay, in that the local mechanic showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning and was able to fix one of the cars, and so they were actually able to drive themselves up. Okay, but they were very thankful for the fact that they could reach out, that so many people scrambled to help, that Courtney immediately contacted the faculty, right, and let them know that the students had run into this difficulty so that, you know, the students shouldn't be penalized by this. And again, it just shows that there's a lot of concern, right, that goes across the campus. Lots of individuals, you know, when there's an emergency, when there's not an emergency, right, to always be there. And the students were very thankful that, you know, they were able to reach us so easily and that we immediately, you know, were able to try to help them.
The only question I'd have is, you aren't up at 5:15?
No, I was asleep. And I have to, you know, I don't know if you've got one of those CPAP things, right? And so I thought it was actually Mark calling, my son, right? Because he'll sometimes do that in the morning. I said, okay, Mark, what do you want? And the person said, this isn't Mark. Because she knew who Mark was, too. So.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. I said, oh, wait a minute, let me get my mask off, because she couldn't hear me. Because, you know, you're fighting against the air being pushed in.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I had to pull that off. I was pretty groggy. 5:15, to be honest with you. But, you know, finally it kind of penetrated what it was that they needed. And, you know, like I said, I contacted Courtney, and she took it from there.
By 5:15, I'd had a shower. I'd cooked a full breakfast and given the baby a bath. I was ready to go to work. I mean, I was like, I'll drive to pick them up at Tupper Lake.
That's right.
Call me anytime, guys.
That's right. I'm more of the night owl, so if they call, you know, late in the evening, it's no problem. But Courtney's asleep by then.
I think I emailed to me at 8:30 last night, said I'm headed to bed now, but I'll talk to you then.
Yeah. And so it's just nice how everybody reaches out. It's so wonderful.
I think a lot of it has to do with the leadership of the institution.
Well, I think it's always been like this here. And, you know, I'm trying to
that
carry
was
a good... I'm trying to be modest here. I think I'm trying to carry on a strong tradition here at the college. It preceded my coming here, let's be honest about that. And, you know, I'm certainly trying to continue.
Certainly have.
And so that concludes all of our reports, Ron.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Is there any other business to come before? This is your opportunity. Okay. Before we adjourn, I'd like to make sure everyone has a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Enjoy the holidays and be safe. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Cloanne. Is there a second? Second by Joe. Nikki?
Nikki can second this.
Cool motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Carrie, thank you very much for being concerned. Thank you for coming.
If I see a picture, I'll let
you
know.
Yeah,
a picture of John and our dog.
Really?
Because the lot is here.
Well,